join us. The show is called American Honor. It's brought to you by RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network. Hey, the call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. The show is about exposing corruption in local, state, and federal governments. Nothing is beyond talking about. If you got a story, bring it out. Let's talk about it. Let's understand how our country has gone from great to kind of like mediocre. But let's be hopeful. We got a president-elect that is going to, I feel, is going to change things and turn things around. What I've noticed lately is all the cop-hater groups and, you know, like the Black Lives Matter bunch and all the other anti-police organizations have either lost their gusto or maybe they're just getting tired and they're figuring out that all this hate that they're spewing out on wanting to kill cops and wanting to kill white people and how white people should go ahead and commit suicide and they're blaming them for everything. Of course, it's all propaganda. It's all for some reason. I'm not really sure what the reason is. Maybe just to divide us all up, which is the last 8 years under the fake president that we have has pretty much accomplished that goal. If there's anything that he may have accomplished, nothing positive, but he's done a pretty good job on that, breaking us up. You know, it's an interesting perspective that Colin Powell or Colin Kaepernick, the 49er quarterback, number 7. You know, what he did probably woke up and united sleeping Americans to what's happening in our country, and that is it kind of brought us all back together again, because I don't know about you, but I still haven't watched an NFL game, football game since that even started. I've heard enough about how it's kind of like spread to other sports teams and into high schools and to colleges where they kneel down and raise their fist and in protest about how oppressive America is, and this is during the national anthem, which supposedly I was taught anyway that you shut your mouth, you stand still, you stand straight, and you listen to the national anthem out of respect and everything that's associated with the flag and this and the culture of America. And so we've heard a lot about who's doing it, but I think the message that these people that decide to protest during a sports event, they're misguided. They've kind of like lost their gusto, and they've lost what they wanted to do was to divide and split up America protest against how oppressive America is and how it's no good and it needs to change and it doesn't need to change. It just needs to get back to how great we used to be. And I think it's having a reverse effect, especially in the pocketbook of the NFL. I don't blame so much these people. They're just ignorant. I mean, they pick a venue that they shouldn't have picked in order to express their rights to protest a grievance and whatnot. This is a private event. This isn't a public event. Go down to the police station or something in front of the police station and then, you know, voice your opinion and raise your fist and kneel down or do whatever you got to do in order to get everybody's attention. And then we'll see if that's really valid. But doing it at a public event where somebody pays to go to a public event and be entertained by the athletes and everything else during this event, and then voice your opinion during this event is just simply wrong. But I think it's having a reverse effect, because I wonder how the NFL is feeling it pinching the bank, whether they're losing a lot of money or at least a lot of fake anyway. It's, in my opinion, the NFL and all the rest of them are pretty much corrupt anyway. But now, all of a sudden, something's happened, and it just didn't take all that much. Of course, to me, that was a lot, seeing people disrespect the flag and the national anthem and the beliefs and cultures of the American way. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what's going to happen here. But getting back to the lack of gusto and effervescence that these anti-cop and anti-law enforcement groups are protesting against officers, and that they need more training, and they're no good, they're all corrupt, they're all biased, they're all prejudiced. Well, we all know that's a bunch of BS, but it's always good to take a shot at a police officer, literally, because that gets the most attention, and the most attention is given by, of course, the mainstream news media. So before I go any further, I want to read, just in case anybody doesn't know, Law Enforcement Code of Ethics. This is not a standardized code of ethics or an oath of honor, but it pretty much simplifies what each officer or most officers take as a sacred oath before they don the gun, the badge, and the uniform. As a law enforcement officer, my fundamental duty is to serve mankind, to safeguard lives and property, to protect the innocent against deception, the weak against oppression or intimidation, and the peaceful against violence or disorder, and to respect the constitutional rights of all men to liberty, equality, and justice. I will keep my private life unsullied as an example to all, maintain courageous calm in the face of danger, scorn, or ridicule, develop self-restraint, and be constantly mindful of the welfare of others. Honest in thought and deed in both my personal and official life, I will be exemplary in obeying the laws of the land and the regulation of my department. Whatever I see or hear of a confidential nature that is confided to me in my official capacity will be kept every secret unless revelation is necessary in the performance of my duty. I will never act officiously or permit personal feelings, prejudices, animosities, or friendships to influence my decisions. With no compromise for crime and with relentless prosecution of criminals, I will enforce the law courteously and appropriately without fear or favor, malice or ill will, never employing unnecessary force or violence, and never accepting gratuities. I recognize the badge of my office as a symbol of public faith, and I accept it as a public trust to be held so long as I am true to the ethics of the police service. I will constantly strive to achieve these objectives and ideals, dedicating myself before God to my chosen profession, law enforcement. And as folks, that pretty much sums it up. And understand, police officers, especially police officers in the law enforcement service, are trained to work independently. And the movie industry has not done us any favors in some of the things that they depict police officers doing. But that's essentially the bottom line. Police officers are trained to function independently. It's when things kind of go south or complaints are made that the upper police management gets involved. And even they are held to the fire for this code of ethics. They cannot violate it either. And when they do, in order to either save face for the department or at least minimize the amount of payouts for these valid complaints, they will lie. They will lie, and once that starts, then the corruption just begins, and the police officer, the real cops on the force, are sacrificed. they are all expendable, and the police department will turn their back on these individuals in order to save money and to save face for the department. So the corruption is really never starts at the bottom line real police officers. It always starts at the upper police management and administration. As long as they condone and tolerate police misconduct, it will occur. If they don't, then it won't. But it's a hard road for everybody to kind of hoe on this thing. Well, I see that my friend and former colleague Doug in Virginia is on the line. And so, Doug, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Doug, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what your feeling was about the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, that situation. And I understand that the BATF was directly involved in that situation. What was your personal feelings? Not when you were working, because we're all under a gag order, but what is your personal feelings in just reflecting back on that situation? What was your perspective?
Well, I was working. I was serving as a deputy U.S. Marshal at the time. I think I had just started my federal career when that went down. And, you know, you see that and you're stunned, because I'm not there. I'm either, I think, in the training academy when that happened in South Georgia, or maybe I just made it back to New York working. So, you see that, and you it's puzzled. You don't understand any of it. So from the outside looking, you can't make any sense of it. And all you're getting is maybe some, third-hand information from somebody whose brother-in-law worked for the ATF, and you heard some kind of leak. But you really could never tell. And so it wasn't until I came over to ATF I had a better understanding of how a lot of that went down and the planning and the machinations that led up to what happened tragically.
Did the supervision in the BATF, when you finally did go over to the BATF, was this kind of like a formal explanation of what happened, or was it just kind of like just side talk in the office on who did what and what went wrong and who was responsible?
I was fortunate because I had the privilege of working with somebody who had been in that field division for many years, and he was there when that went down. And he would tell me, from being, I guess, boots on the ground perspective, it was started out as a righteous investigation. The ATF.
It was about illegal weapons, correct?
Yes. And, Koresh, they tried to, they had some kind of warrant, I think it was, for Koresh. And they tried to work with the local authorities to bring this in peaceably. And for those that don't know, Koresh had a history of having sex with underage girls there, probably stuff you see on documentaries. He would, tell people that were married that the husbands couldn't have conjugal, visits with the wife, but he could with them. And there were always, there had several complaints of child neglect or child abuse. And so
let me stop you here a second. These complaints, did they go to the local authority, the local sheriff?
Yes. They went to, like, Child Protective Service.
Ah, okay.
And so what they did was, so they'd get these complaints, and occasionally they would contact, I guess, Koresh, and Koresh would come into town and sit down with one of these, social workers, and they would discuss it, and of course, magically nothing was found. And so Koresh would go back. So this, there was some familiarity with the local, authorities, let's say, and I mean like, Child Protective Services, and the Branch Davidian compound. So my understanding was they went to the child protective people and said, listen, can you call them in for a visit? We don't want to go out there, but we want to grab them, and we want to do this without incident. And they said no, they didn't want to participate. So then this started to set in motion the project, if you will, or the operation, to get Koresh. And
I see.
And they had an undercover agent in with the Branch Davidians. And when they
let me ask you this. What was the reason for having an undercover federal agent inside the Branch Davidians if it was for child abuse and child endangerment type of charges?
Well, the undercover was an ATF agent. It was not somebody from the local authorities.
They were looking at Koresh for illegal weapons, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
So that
coincided with the same investigation of Koresh for child abuse and child molestation type thing from the local authorities.
Well, they had had complaints, and I don't know the time period, but I would assume it was a couple of years. I can't say whether it was 150 or 1,000 or 3, but there had been calls back and forth. There had been occasional complaints made.
Uh-huh.
And it could have been just for child neglect, like you don't put them in school or something like that. And I can't, you know, that to that part, I couldn't speak with any you know, hard information, so...
Right. Now, you're getting this information from supervision in BATF, correct?
I got this from somebody that worked in the field division. As a matter of fact, he worked in a particular office that was tasked, where the supervisor was tasked with writing the operational plan for that. And...
Now, I know what you're talking about when you talk about an operational plan, because I sometimes was part of BATF's operational plans when you were based in Las Vegas. So I understand what an operational plan is, and it's pretty, detailed. And they leave nothing to chance. I mean, they look at every angle so this thing could be accomplished safely.
Yes. Now, the op plans that we worked on, or the, you know, the forms that you see me fill out, that was the result of that Branch Davidian fiasco.
You mean that started the whole process of those type of operational planning?
That extent, yes.
I see. Okay, and so, why did that occur? Because it needed improvement, or you know, this was kind of like case specific that, you know, nobody wants to hurt anybody. Nobody wants to murder anybody or anything like that. So that's why you have these operational plans.
Yes. I don't know how formalized they were. I mean, I can tell you when I was in the Marshal Service and we were going to arrest somebody, you know, our operational plan was we're going to meet at the office or we're going to meet at the White Castle on White Plains Road, the Bronx, at 5:30 in the morning, and it would be like, okay, you three go in the alley, these three go up the stairs in the front door, and watch the fire escape in case the guy does a Peter Pan out the window. And so that's the way we were doing it there. You know, it was on a paper bag, literally. I don't know the extent of ATF's operational planning before the Branch Davidian incident. But my friend supervisor was tasked with writing that up. And when you looked at the layout, there was no cover. It was pretty much like, you know, Dallas or one of those shows where it was just a big house and it was all flat land. So there wasn't like trees you could hide in. And he had written up an operational plan, as I was told, that it said you needed APCs, you were going to need to arm the people with certain kind of equipment. And the supervision above didn't like that when he finished writing it up, and so they took him off of it. He had submitted an operational plan, and they took it away from him, the responsibility of continuing to plan it.
And who was the person that took his operational plan away? Telling me I got to beware. Dougs, stay on the line, and I'll be back after the commercial.
It's Jimmy here from Zipa. Today I wanted to tell you about my efforts to achieve global elimination of snoring. It all starts with respect. respect for yourself and respect for others. Listen, you think you're being a nice guy or a nice girl by letting the guy or girl next to you sleep and snore every night. It's the ultimate disrespect to have that happen. You wake that person up and you tell them, go to Zeepa.com now. ZYPPAH.com. We're not going to tolerate this, all right? Snoring is not okay. Someone next to you is snoring, you tell them to buy a Zeepa. ZYPPAH.com. I know that you're listening to these snoring things and you're thinking, well, it don't apply to me. I don't have these problems. A lot of people are in denial, but it's true. Listen, if you're snoring, you gotta stop it. What you gotta do is get this fixed. Get a Zeepa and change your life. ZYPPAH.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Okay, this is Gordon Martinez. The show is called American Honor. It's brought to you by RBN. The call-in number is 800-313-9443. We have Doug, former BATF special agent, who is honorably retired just recently. And Doug, I just want to tell you that I didn't mean to put you on the spot in a cold question like this without any preparation, because I wanted it to be spontaneous. And this is an opportunity for at least most of us in the world of righteousness and truth and respect and honor and integrity. We want to know what the truth is behind the Waco incident and with the Branch Davidians. And this is the only way I can think of ever to do it, is to hit you cold. If you've got information, tell me about it. Tell the listeners about it, so that we can get it from firsthand instead of all this rumor and all this stuff from the government, which you don't know what is true, you don't know what's false, you don't know anything. And here we have somebody that I know personally and that I respect and has my complete endorsement, telling me right to my face, right over the air, the behind-the-scenes stuff that went on. Now, what you're telling me is that the first operational plan that was made by your friend in the BATF was rejected, and I want to know the people, if you're allowed to do this, I want to know the people that rejected that plan.
I remember... You know, I don't know exactly who said it, but this was being pushed from the field division management. So This was being pushed from the special agent in charge down. And the rank structure in a field division is usually you have a special agent in charge, you'll have two what they call ASACs, assistant special agents in charge, and then you have branch drop supervisors for what they call different enforcement groups. So I would have, you know, and this I can't remember my friend who was there told me who rejected it. He just said that management, upper management, rejected it. So it had to have probably gone all the way to the SAC, special agent in charge.
I see. And though that wouldn't be too hard to find out who was in charge. And of course, was it Janet Reno that was in charge of the whole operation?
He would have been overseeing. She would have been the attorney general. Whether they told her what they were doing, I can't say for sure. Depending on the size of the operation, they may tell them. They may not tell them.
But
sensitivity. And nobody knew that what was going to happen with these Branch Davidians was going to happen the way it did. I mean, Koresh would do things like he'd get all spun up and then say he'd hand out the rifles, all the weapons. It was like, you know, when you're on a ship in the old, like, Errol Flynn movies where they decide they're going to get attacked or they're going to go board a ship, so they break out the muskets. And he would give out the weapons. And then they would go through all sorts of drills, and then he would get nervous and he would take all the weapons back and lock them up again.
Okay, and this information that he was doing this kind of a bizarre drill was supplied by the undercover agent from the BATF and supervision in the field. So you would get this information from them, and then it was imparted upon you through your friend. Is that correct?
I guess that's pretty much it. My friend didn't go on the operation, and I'll explain that when I get a chance. His supervisor was the one that was just tasked with preparing the operational plan for the operation.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Does an operational plan have to go to the Justice Department or to the FBI or to some other agency for approval?
The FBI would love it to everything to be filtered through them, but unfortunately for the for them, no. It's only contained. It probably is contained within a field division, unless you're going to involve multiple field divisions, and then you've got to bring in other, other assets, and it may go higher. Depending on the size of it, okay? Because I later on worked in the communication center, and there were plenty of times stuff went down, and the people that were like the fourth line supervisors had no idea what was going on. Because guys are based in Washington. Because they're based in Washington, D.C., and so if you're talking, let's say, the Houston Field Division, where this occurred, they're not necessarily going to tell them, hey, we're going to do this operation, depending on the size you get.
All right, well, Doug, stay on the line. I want to continue this in as in-depth as we possibly can, so please stay on the line.
And Sundays pass on by. I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know that when I won't. Working for a living. Working for a living.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritious meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle.
Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Okay, this is Gordon Martinez. The show's called American Honor. It's brought to you by RBN. We're talking with former BATF Special Agent Doug from Virginia, who I personally have worked with, and I know him to be a very honorable and a very honest individual. Truth has always been the number one thing between us whenever we had any operations together, and I'm confident that it still is. Doug, I wanted to go into a new operational plan was made, and it was approved by all the higher-ups. Okay? At what point did the FBI come in and take over?
They came in after the initial assault where the people were all injured, and they had, I think they had tried to negotiate with the Branch Davidians so that we could take out our wounded. I mean, there were people that were laying there over 24 hours that were injured trying to hide because they were still taking shots at them. So once they had kind of,
Let me clear up something here. You're talking about BATF agents that were injured and wounded or Branch Davidian people that were injured and wounded?
It was BATF people because they were laying out in the clearing where they were hiding behind buildings. There was a couple of people that had been shot, and they couldn't go get them because every time they would try to move in to get the wounded, the Branch Davidians would shoot at them.
My God, you know, this is the first time I've ever heard of anything like this. This is the first time that I have become aware that there were injured ATF agents laying out in the field around the building, and medical aid was refused by the Branch Davidian shooting at them. Now, I know that there were four, correct me if I'm wrong, were there four BATF agents that were killed in this?
Yes. Yes.
And this is the second operation that operational plan that was approved, and that one didn't work out.
Yes.
And you have numerous ATF agents, and I'm sure numerous Branch Davidian people that were injured. At this point, who made the decision for the FBI to come in there and start negotiating and working out different plans and all that?
Well, what happens is, and I would certainly think it's in many police departments, you know, but certainly with the DOJ, if you had an incident like that, what you do is you replace them with another law enforcement agency so you can have a cooling off. So the last thing you want to do, so you pull the ATF people off, you put the FBI people on, they assume then perimeter control of the operation, and then I assume at that point they began negotiating with Koresh.
Now, that perimeter, you have an inner perimeter and you have an outer perimeter. What role did the BATF play in this?
At that point, I don't know if they had people other than, let's say, management and maybe people that were involved intimately in the case to be able to relay information.
I see.
And you don't want to have an instance like this where you have dead people, your comrades in arms that have been shot and killed and injured, and then have them involved in the perimeter. It becomes, you know, you're trying to do everybody a favor.
Yeah, that makes sense. They would be emotionally involved, and they would be ineffective. So now, essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, FBI has now total, complete management and operational control of this situation. Is that correct?
That was my understanding.
Okay. Who brought in the tank?
Gosh, that had to be the Bureau that did that. That wasn't a. We don't own a tank. So I don't know where they were, and it was an APC, an armored personnel carrier, versus a tank.
Right. Now, we're going to digress in just a minute because I need to know, and I guess for my own edification is if the charges were weapons violations, if that was the main crust and not. The child abuse stuff or the child molestation stuff or any other perversion that was going on. If that was it, who were they after? Just Koresh or everybody else that was complicit with Koresh?
I always knew it to be Koresh. If there was others involved, I wasn't aware. Like I said, I wasn't intimately involved in that operation, so I couldn't tell you for sure. But I know Koresh was the direct person they wanted to get.
Okay, being a 39-year veteran in law enforcement, there's numerous ways that you apprehend a suspect. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it could be just as simple as them coming out to check their mail. Why mm-hmm. didn't they just wait until Koresh came out of that building to do his grocery shopping or to do anything else? Because he'd already had the previous activity of coming into town, walking freely amongst everybody, talking with everybody. Why didn't they just wait it out?
I believe the special agent in charge wanted to eventually get him. And my understanding, and I don't have hard evidence, like I said, I knew somebody who was very intimately aware of the politics of the field division. The special agent in charge was being relieved of his position and sent to headquarters for something negative. And he wanted to do, I was told that he wanted to do this operation to show his bosses in D.C. he still had the stuff, that it was a mistake to relieve him. And so
he got it kind of a hurry, huh?
Yeah, so they forced the issue versus doing that kind of long, drawn-out, which, in hindsight, would have been better. But even then, they knew. There was, if you go back and look at the house, there was no cover for these guys. There was nothing there. But when the supervisor who did the original op plan said, you need APCs to go in there, protect the guys, and they said, no, that looks too heavy, we don't want to do this, they had actually told them they were only allowed to carry a pistol with two magazines of ammunition, and they didn't even want them to have long guns. So they, at the time, they were using AR-15. They didn't even want them to carry AR-15s and shotguns because the upper-level bosses thought this would look too much. So they were basically forcing them into a clearing with defensive weapons.
So they bring in a tank.
That came later, but that wasn't my outfit. That was another outfit.
The FBI?
I thought it was the FBI that brought in that APC.
So now, bottom line is things went south even worse. And what was it, 87 people, men, women, and children, are dead.
Yes.
This is absolutely disgusting.
Well, I guess let's throw some extra chili sauce on this. The undercover, right before this thing was going down, he got word out to his handler or a manager. That was a second-line supervisor that was nearby. And he told them, they know you're coming. Because it already had been, if you see that when they do the historical kind of autopsies on this operation.
I saw the documentary on this thing, and I was just sick.
So they had already leaked. So Koresh knew that this was there was an op going down, and it was going to go down at his place. So, again, we've broken open the powder room, armed all the people with the muskets. They're all waiting. And so right. There was a chance to stop this, and the boss decided, no, it's going to go. So there you had it.
That is absolutely ugly. And I want to thank you for kind of giving us a little inside look at what really went on inside the inside that operation. Now, just diverting. Yeah, go ahead. What?
They never, and just so everybody understands, they never treated the upper management, never treated any of the agents that were involved, except for the ones that died, with any type of relevance. My understanding was when they gave them awards, they wouldn't do it at headquarters. They wouldn't do it at, I think it was the Ariel Rios building. They went someplace off-site that was very quiet, and they gave them the awards. The case, like the autopsy, or, the after-action report, I think the Texas Rangers were brought in to do the investigation of why it went down. All the case files were actually locked, and you couldn't get into them unless you had special permission.
The highest law enforcement officer in that region is the sheriff. Sheriff of that county. Did you hear of any action by the sheriff to help rectify and understand this situation?
Not to my knowledge. I was never told anything about the involvement of local authorities.
Now you do agree. And it's my understanding the sheriff is the highest law enforcement officer in that county. Is that correct?
Sure.
So he had to give his permission, pretty much like what former Sheriff Doug Gillespie did in the Bundy and the Bunkerville situation, and pretty much just like the sheriff did up in the Harney County in Burns, Oregon situation. They gave the federal government permission to come in there and handle this situation.
Well, I don't necessarily think that it happened that way, because you'll go in, you'll have a counterpart someplace in the police department, and you may tell them, an agent or supervisor goes in and says, "Listen, we're going to do an operation here. Okay, if it's a big one," and you always want to have the local authorities involved. But they were trying to keep it under wraps, and I would have thought that you'd
under wraps from who? The general public or
yeah, the
or
general
who?
General public. I mean, but look, there are some jurisdictions out there, and I won't name them. But I used to know agents that worked in those jurisdictions, and they couldn't tell the local police what they were doing, especially when it came to like drugs.
Because they didn't trust the local police.
That's correct.
Okay, I understand that, but that still doesn't negate the premise or the law that says that the sheriff of each county is the highest law enforcement officer of that county. Now, if that sheriff is corrupt, which we have plenty of those to choose from, then that needs to be corrected. But I guess historically, the sheriff of the county is the highest law enforcement elected official for that county, and he's the one that is responsible for everything that has to do with his constituents in that county. And he has the highest authority.
But so, you don't ask permission. You don't ask permission. I said you don't ask. I never did. You don't ask for permission from the local authorities to do your work. You may tell them, hey, I'm going to go to 123 Sesame Street, apartment 5. You may get a local officer like I would tell you. And you would come with me, and then you would call in, and you'd have an event number. And so, therefore, we at least covered. We had you on scene so that you could do, you know, if you remember that one op with I had the undercover with the taxi, and the woman's chasing me, telling me the medallion's not on.
You had to
do that one. So, yeah, that's why. That's how you did it at a local level. That's how you can't, you know, calling the sheriff up. You know, the sheriff's going to say, don't talk to me. You know, tell whoever, the sergeant or the captain or whatever. And that's how they're going to do it. And so if you don't lay all your cards on the table and say, hey, we're going to do this, you know, like you think this could be a problem, so you're going to bring, you know, you're going to bring everybody. And if they were worried about stuff being leaked, which, you know, in the after action of that, that's exactly what happened. It was leaked through a police dispatcher that knew somebody, and so that blew it out. They were trying to keep it quiet. And they've gone a long way.
You gotta appreciate the fact that 87 people, men, women, and children, are dead because of an operation that may or may not have been compromised. And I'm sure it was, but you have to take that into a factor that 87 people, and not all of them innocent, but mostly men, women, and children, are dead. And nobody has been held accountable for this. So, and just diverting just a little bit. And, of course, my mind kind of goes from, you know, day one all the way to the present, and it just skips over and picks out certain things. The affirmative action process in hiring individuals for at least civil service anyway, did you ever see any demoralizing or degrading choices that were forced upon your agency to hire individuals that were absolutely, totally incompetent and totally unqualified, and just because of their skin color, they were hired? Did you ever have or come across anything like that in the BATF?
I think it got more prevalent under this presidential administration.
This present one? This fake guy that we got in there that Joe Arpaio proved without a doubt that the document that this fake guy presented was totally false. Is that the same guy we're talking about?
Yeah. I think it got more then. I will tell you a side note. There was two upper-level ATF managers, executives, and both of their sons went into the academy.
Right.
And one of them was of a certain skin color, and the other one was not.
Okay. We're talking non-Caucasians.
Correct.
Okay.
There was one, and the one that was Caucasian, I think, had some troubling history. But because he was the son of arguably the number one guy, they let it go. And the other guy was just, from what I gather, was not a hard charger in the academy. But he, as I was told by somebody, he says to me, you know, the two guys that were hired, these two kids, were hired under Schedule B. And I always thought Schedule B hiring dealt with military. And I said, oh, they were both in the military? He said, no. But I said, well, then how'd they get in? I thought Schedule B was military. And they go, no, it's also, well, yes, but it's also for special, like, special needs. If you have, like, some type of problem, they can hire you. And I said, okay.
Special needs? Go ahead.
I said, well, what kind of special needs? Like, why would you hire them? They, well, this is what they got them in. I said, what was their special handicap? He said, frequent hand washing. And I said, what? And he goes, yeah. And I mean, I said, like, in Jack Nicholson's character in As Good As It Gets, when he's got to wash his hands with the hot water with the Dial soap and throw the soap
out. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He says, yeah, that's what it was. And I you know, I just...
Oh, my God.
I think I said something inappropriate that's not allowed on your radio show. But I was like, you know, oh, my God. And then magically, they were both cured once they got out of the academy.
Oh, jeez. Well, Doug, thank you for being on the show. I got one other caller, Greg in Arkansas, and I'll get to him as soon as the commercial is over. Thanks again for calling.
All right. No problem. Take care.
This is not legal advice. This is a public service announcement from TakeFromCaesar.us. Only one statute explains how to tax your paycheck, Tax Code Section 83. In decisions from 1979 to 2011, the courts say Section 83 governs the taxation of all compensation for personal services, but the IRS lies on the stand, claiming to be unfamiliar with Section 83. Only one person can explain what Section 83 means, David Merlin. Visit TakeFromCaesar.us for more information.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Hi, my name is David Merlin from TakeFromCaesar.us. Income is defined in the tax code. All property is a cost, including labor, according to statute. You're deprived of the provisions of Section 83 whenever you pay an income tax on your compensation. According to Section 83, only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. The government can't so much as provide an interpretation of Section 83 of its own. Get your paradigm shift and understanding today at TakeFromCaesar.us.
Brought to you by RBN, and we have Greg in Arkansas on the line. Greg, you still there?
Indeed. Yes, indeed. Hi, Gordon. I enjoy your show.
Oh, Doug, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Doug sounds like a really good-hearted guy, and it's really, really obvious that those types of agencies really treat them like mushrooms. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
You don't know the half of it, Greg. It's and I worked with him for several years, and not a better guy from another agency have I ever worked with. I trust him implicitly. And what's on your mind? You got a couple of minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, he sounds really, really decent. But I was going to suggest a real heavy dose to the other end of the story, and that would, of course, be Waco Rules of Engagement, about a two-hour documentary with the FLIR footage and all type of things. And I
Waco's,
think
I'm writing this down. I'm writing this down. Great. Oh, Waco's Rules of Engagement.
Yes, Waco Rules of Engagement. It is an astounding two-hour documentary that it will have you in tears by the end to know what was really, really, really going on there. And sounds as if Doug came from inside the agency and they didn't really want him to know the truth. Even his admission that they locked the files up so nobody could get to him, you bet they didn't really want him to know what went down. But if you have not seen Waco Rules of Engagement, and that's everybody in the audience, sit down and watch it, because you're about to have you're about to be shattered at what really went on there.
Well, I'm very interested in always the truth, and that one, even the documentaries that I have seen of it, and the video footage that was released by the government shows the tank, moving around and all that. It bothers me because no answers have really been given. No truthful answers have been given for their actions, and they've gotten away with these kind of things, especially up there in January 26, 2016, with the murder, assassination, and ambush of Robert LaFoy Finnegan. Now, why isn't that explained yet?
Well, there are some people on your network, great people that are working with it, but Gordon, just tell them to watch Waco Rules of Engagement, and I do believe, and yourself too, if you have not seen it, because you
I haven't seen it, but I sure
oh my
am
goodness, man.
To.
I'll wait to hear you comment on it, because if you haven't seen it, you need to see it really, really, really soon, because honestly, Gordon, I wouldn't have, knowing what I've seen on that documentary, which is pretty much irrefutable, I would not have subjected Doug to your audience tonight, to be honest, because your audience was probably chomping at the bit like I was, hearing things like it was a track machine when there were how many tanks, and, you know.
Well, he wasn't awful. There, and if he was, I know he would have told me that what he saw and what he remembers. And he's repeating third hand on what his friend within the agency. And you got to understand these guys. I've been working around FBI guys and ATF guys for years. I know that the gag order that is strictly enforced, and they can lose their job at the drop of a hat. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but they sign two documents when they get the approval to work. One is their acceptance papers, and the second is their resignation papers minus the date. So,
yes, I'm sure. And incidentally, the song you're playing right now is on Waco Rules of Engagement, because the FBI playing it to drive them crazy. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And anyway, have a good one. Thanks for calling in. This is Gordon Martinez. We're coming to the close of our show. And everybody be safe. And this may not be politically correct, but I don't care. Merry Christmas to all.
Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. OldNESoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to OldNESoap.com. That's OldNESoap.com. OldNESoap.com.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.